Hi, welcome to History's Great Speeches. I'm Charles Featherston, voice artist, narrator and compiler of the series. Please like or subscribe and feel free to contact me via Bandcamp, Podbean, Facebook or Patreon to let me know speeches or time periods you'd like to see covered. You can find a full set of links at my website, charlesfeatherston.uk.
On the Peace, 346.
I see, men of Athens, that our present situation is one of great perplexity and confusion, for not only have many of our interests been sacrificed, so that it is of no use to make eloquent speeches about them, but even as regards what still remains to us, there is no general agreement in any single point as to what is expedient. Some hold one view, and some another. Perplexing, moreover, and difficult as deliberation naturally is, men of Athens, you have made it far more difficult. For while all the rest of mankind are in the habit of resorting to deliberation before the event, you do not do so until afterwards. And consequently, during the whole time that falls within my memory, however high a reputation for eloquence one who upbraids you for all your errors may enjoy, the desired results and the objects of your deliberations pass out of your grasp. And yet I believe, and it is because I have convinced myself of this that I have risen, that if you resolve to abandon all clamour and contention, as becomes men who are deliberating on behalf of their country upon so great an issue, I shall be able to describe and recommend measures to you, by which the situation may be improved, and what we have sacrificed, recovered. Now, although I know perfectly well, men of Athens, that to speak to you about one's own earlier speeches and about oneself is a practice which is always extremely repaying, I feel the vulgarity and offensiveness of it so strongly that I shrink from it even when I see that it is necessary. I think, however, that you will form a better judgment on the subject on which I am about to speak if I remind you of some few of the things which I have said on certain previous occasions. In the first place, men of Athens, when at the time of the disturbances in Euboea you were being urged to assist Plutarchus and to undertake an inglorious and costly campaign, I came forward first and unsupported to oppose this action, and was almost torn in pieces by those who for the sake of their own petty profits had induced you to commit many grave errors. And when only a short time had elapsed, along with the shame which you incurred and the treatment which you received, treatment such as no people in the world ever before experienced at the hands of those whom they went to assist, there came the recognition by all of you of the baseness of those who had urged you to this course and of the excellence of my own advice. Again, men of Athens, I observed that Neoptolemus the actor, who was allowed freedom of movement everywhere on the ground of his profession and was doing the city the greatest mischief, was managing and directing your communications with Philip in Philip's own interest. And I came forward and informed you, and that, not to gratify any private dislike or desire to misrepresent him, as subsequent events have made plain. And in this case I shall not, as before, throw the blame on any speakers or defenders of Neoptolemus. Indeed, he had no defenders. It is yourselves that I blame. For had you been watching rival tragedies in the theatre, instead of discussing the vital interests of a whole state, you could not have listened with more partiality towards him, or more prejudice against me. And yet I believe you have all now realised that though, according to his own assertion, this visit to the enemy's country was paid in order that he might get in the debts owing to him there, and return with funds to perform his public service here, though he was always repeating the statement that it was monstrous to accuse those who were transferring their means from Macedonia to Athens. Yet, when the peace had removed all danger, he converted his real estate here into money and took himself off with it to Philip. These, then, are two events which I have foretold, events which, because their real character was exactly and faithfully disclosed to me, are a testimony to the speeches which I have delivered. A third, men of Athens, was the following. And when I have given you this one instance, I will immediately proceed to the subject on which I have come forward to speak. When we returned from the embassy, after receiving from Philip his oath to maintain the peace, there were some who promised that Thespiae and Plataeae would be repeopled, and said that if Philip became master of the situation, he would save the Phocians and would break up the city of Thebes into villages. that Oropus would be yours and that Euboea would be restored to you in place of Amphipolis. With other hopes and deceptions of the same kind, by which you were seduced into sacrificing the Phocians in a manner that was contrary to your interest and perhaps to your honour also. But as for me, you will find that neither had I any share in this deception, nor yet did I hold my peace. On the contrary, I warned you plainly, as I know you remember, that I had no knowledge and no expectations of this kind, and that I regarded such statements as nonsense. All these plain instances of superior foresight on my part, men of Athens, I shall not ascribe to any cleverness, any boasted merits of my own. I will not pretend that my foreknowledge and discernment are due to any causes but such as I will name, and they are two. The first, men of Athens, is that good fortune, which, I observe, is more powerful than all the cleverness and wisdom on earth. The second is the fact that my judgment and reasoning are disinterested. No one can point to any personal gain in connection with my public acts and words. And therefore I see what is to our interest undistorted in the light in which the actual facts reveal it. But when you throw money into one scale of the balance, its weight carries everything with it. Your judgment is instantly dragged down with it, and one who has acted so can no longer think soundly or healthily about anything. Now, there is one primary condition which must be observed by anyone who would furnish the city with allies or contributions or anything else. He must do it without breaking the existing peace. Not because the peace is at all admirable or creditable to you, but because, whatever its character, it would have been better in the actual circumstances that it should never have been made than that, having been made, it should now be broken through our action. For we have sacrificed many advantages which we possessed when we made it, and which would have rendered the war safer and easier for us then than it is now. The second condition, men of Athens, is that we shall not draw upon these self-styled Ambictyons, who are now assembled, until they have an irresistible or a plausible reason for making a united war against us. My own belief is that if war broke out again between ourselves and Philip, about Amphipolis or any such claim of our own, in which the Thessalians and Argives and Thebans had no interest, none of these people would go to war against us, least of all. And let no one raise a clamour before he hears what I have to say. Least of all the Thebans. Not because they are in any pleasant mood towards us, not because they would not be glad to gratify Philip, but because they know perfectly well, however stupid one may think them, that if war springs up between themselves and you, they will get all the hardships of war for their share, while another will sit by, waiting to secure all the advantages. And they are not likely to sacrifice themselves for such a prospect, unless the origin and the cause of the war are such as concern all alike. Nor again should we, in my opinion, suffer at all if we went to war with Thebes on account of Oropus or any other purely Athenian interest. For I believe that while those who would assist ourselves or the Thebans would give their aid if their allies' own country were invaded, they would not join either in an offensive campaign. For this is the manner of alliances, such at least as are worth considering, and the relationship is naturally of this kind. The goodwill of each ally, whether it be towards ourselves or towards the Thebans, does not imply the same interest in our conquest of others as in our existence. Our continued existence they would all desire for their own sakes, but none of them would wish that through conquest either of us should become their own masters. What is it then that I regard with apprehension? What is it that we must guard against? I fear lest a common pretext should be supplied for the coming war, a common charge against us, which will appeal to all alike. For if the Argives and Messenians and Megalopolitans and some of the other Peloponnesians who are in sympathy with them adopt a hostile attitude towards us owing to our negotiations for peace with Sparta, and the belief that to some extent we are giving our approval to the policy which the Spartans have pursued, if the Thebans already, as we are told, detest us and are sure to become even more hostile because we are harbouring those whom they have exiled and losing no opportunity of displaying our ill will towards them. And the Thessalians, because we are offering a refuge to the Phocian fugitives. And Philip, because we are preventing his admission to Amphictyonic rank. My fear is that, when each power has thus its separate reasons for resentment, they may unite in war against us, with the decrees of the Amphictyons for their pretext. And so each may be drawn on farther than their several interests would carry them, just as they were in dealing with the Phocians. For you doubtless realize that it was not through any unity in their respective ambitions that the Thebans and Philip and the Thessalians all acted together just now. The Thebans, for instance, could not prevent Philip from marching through and occupying the passes, nor even from stepping in at the last moment to reap the credit of all that they themselves had toiled for. For as it is, though the Thebans have gained something so far as the recovery of their territory is concerned, their honour and reputation have suffered shamefully, since it now appears as though they would have gained nothing unless Philip had crossed the pass. This was not what they intended. They only submitted to all this in their anxiety to obtain Orchomenus and Corionea, and their inability to do so otherwise. And as to Philip, some persons, as you know, are bold enough to say that it was not from any wish to do so that he handed over Orchomenus and Corionea to Thebes, but from compulsion. And although I must part company with them there, I am sure that at least he did not want to do this more than he desired to occupy the passes, and to get the credit of appearing to have determined the issue of the war, and to manage the Pythian games by his own authority. These, I am sure, were the objects which he coveted most greedily. The Thessalians, again, did not desire to see either the Thebans or Philip growing powerful. For in any such contingency they thought that they themselves were menaced. But they did desire to secure two privileges, admission to the Amphictyonic meeting and the recovery of rights at Delphi. And in their eagerness for these privileges, they joined Philip in the actions in question. Thus you will find that each was led on for the sake of private ends and to take action which they in no way desired to take. But this is the very thing against which we have now to be on our guard.
Are we then, for fear of this, to submit to Philip? And do you require this of us, you ask me?
Far from it. Our action must be such as will be in no way unworthy of us, and at the same time will not lead to war, but will prove to all our good sense and the justice of our position. And, in answer to those who are bold enough to think that we should refuse to submit to anything whatever, and who cannot foresee the war that must follow, I wish to urge this consideration. We are allowing the Thebans to hold Oropus, and if anyone asked us to state the reason honestly, we should say that it was to avoid war. Again, we have just ceded Amphipolis to Philip by the Treaty of Peace. We permit the Cardians to occupy a position apart from the other colonists in the Chersonese. We allow the Prince of Caria to seize the islands of Chios, Kos, and Rhodes, and the Byzantines to drive our vessels to shore. Obviously, because we believe that the tranquility afforded by peace brings more blessings than any collision or contention over these grievances would bring. So that it would be a foolish and an utterly perverse policy, when we have behaved in this manner towards each of our adversaries individually, where our own most essential interests were concerned, to go now to war with all of them together on account of this shadow at Delphi.